Justification is a word we use when talking about Christian faith and doctrine. How good is your understanding of justification? Dr. Martin Luther is quoted as saying, "Justification is the article by which the church stands or falls." It sounds like a teaching of pivotal importance. If someone were to ask you to explain justification, could you do it? What would you say? We'll put that question to Aaron today as we discuss the doctrine of justification on this episode of Craving Answers, Craving God. I'm Chuck Rathert with Aaron Miller. Aaron is the senior pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Springfield, Illinois. Aaron, a discussion of justification. Oh boy, it sounds like it could be a little bit on the highbrow side. Maybe we should just leave it to the theologians and pastors. What do you think?
It's good. We need some eggheads to talk about difficult to understand stuff so that we can keep on working on trying to get it right. But justification isn't an academic problem. It's a human problem. All human beings are trying to justify themselves. This is whether you're the most devout religious person or whether you're the biggest skeptical atheist. There's something about your life that you're saying, this is justification for my existence. I can justify why I belong here or whether I belong, period. And as long as it continues to be not an academic problem, but a human problem, every single one of us humans is going to have to grapple with it. So we might as well do it here.
So why does Luther say that the article of justification is the doctrine on which the church stands or falls? It makes it sound like don't go on to anything else until you get this one right. Is that what he's saying?
Yes. For Luther, this is, especially in his context, the medieval Roman Catholic Church, people who believed that what made them right was...
Or just.
Was a series of things that they did or didn't accomplish. You know, I mean, religious ceremonies, saying certain prayers, going to church, doing confession, buying indulgences. And Luther was trying to point out that the thing that makes you right isn't anything that it can't be anything about you. You have to get your rightness or your righteousness, to be like more formal and eggheadish. You have to get your righteousness from outside of yourself. It's going to have to come from outside of you because we humans are incapable of doing anything so well or so big or so much that it always carries the weight of rightness, righteousness. We're going to have to get it from outside of ourselves. So for Luther, finding your rightness, your righteousness in God giving you his righteousness was foundational. Now, sometimes we Lutherans have, we've said, okay, well, that's it. Justification, that's all we want to talk about. And it's created for several different reasons that I don't know if we need to go into here or not. We need to sometimes use that as a foundation, but move on to other important things. In my mind, the biggest one, and we're not talking about this today, but this would be a good topic at some point. Adoption. Adoption is that our rightness with God is not just legal in the sense that our slates get wiped clean and our bad record gets expunged. It's relational. We get moved into a relationship with God where he becomes, by us being united with Jesus, our Father. We sometimes ignore that. We know it's true, but we talk about justification so much that we miss out on that. So it's foundational. It's not the only doctrine in Scripture, but it is definitely important.
So among Christians, I don't know if you can evaluate this or not, but I guess there are misconceptions about justification.
Yes.
We talk about it, preach about it, talk about it in Sunday school, and then 20 years later, I still got something messed up in my mind about what justification means. What are some common misconceptions about justification?
I bet this is different over different at different times and places. But in my experience now, in my own heart and in talking to other people who are Christians or who want to become Christians, the biggest misconception about justification I see is that justification is moral. We can't do enough good deeds to make God happy. And a Christian will come to the place where they say, okay, I can't do enough good deeds. Morally, I can't satisfy God's righteous requirements. So I need Jesus. I need Jesus to pay the price for the sins that I've done. And then, that's right, that's true. And then they'll leave church and they'll go to work on Monday morning and they'll wrap themselves up in their job. Or they'll post pictures of their grandkids on social media and they'll wrap themselves up in, what do people think about my grandkids? And what they're doing is that they know that they shouldn't justify themselves by their good works. And they know that their bad works don't unjustify them. But outside of religious questions, spiritual things, I'm putting that in scare quotes, they don't have any problem justifying themselves because I'm a successful businessman. That gives me purpose and meaning. That justifies my existence Monday through Friday. Or I'm a good golfer. That justifies my existence. Or I'm funny, or people like me, or I've got a beautiful family. And by slimming justification down to being a moral question, they've stripped it of its broad application. And so when they lose their job, or when they can't play golf anymore, or when their grandkids don't meet their expectations, now they don't have anywhere to go to get hope. That justification has been dashed. And all along, we should have been telling them and we should have been believing. I say we, I guess I'm saying mean pastors. Pastors are a part of the problem too, speaking personally. We should have been finding our identity and our justification, not in our good sermons or in our good counseling sessions or in our good Bible studies or how much our shut-ins love us for coming and visiting them. That's a bad way to justify yourself. We should have been finding our justification outside of ourselves in God's love for us in Jesus Christ. We should have been justified by faith in Jesus instead of, I don't know, does this make sense? We know enough to know that we're not justified by our good works, but we don't know enough to know that we're not justified by all these other parts of our lives. And so we self-justify over here while we're Christ being justified by faith in terms of how do I get right with God morally?
Well, let's talk about self-justification. I want to take a look at Luke's account of the Good Samaritan, the parable of the Good Samaritan. It's found in chapter 10 of his gospel. I want to read several verses here, verses 25 through 29, where it says, "And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him, that being Jesus, to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?' He said to him, 'What is written in the law? How do you read it?' And he answered, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.' And he said to him, 'You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live.' But he," meaning the lawyer, "desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?' So the lawyer got his answer, but for some reason it wasn't good enough. He wanted to press the question further. In this example, what is the lawyer's need for self-justification? Because that's what he said he wanted to do, justify himself.
Yeah, I mean, he realizes that the weight of what Jesus is putting on him is unbearable. You know, if somebody said to you, let's take this out of Jesus language right now, because you and I know, and a lot of our listeners know, not all of them, some of them are seekers and outsiders, but I say outsiders in the sense of outsiders to Christianity. You and I know there's like a Lutheran place we could go right now with some pat answers. We could shut it down and be done. But let's think about this. Let's momentarily remove Jesus from this. If you moved to a neighborhood and you joined the HOA and you went to the first meeting and you said to the president of the HOA or to somebody there who was kind of a mucky muck in the neighborhood, what do I need to do to fit into this neighborhood? And they said to you, you need to love all your neighbors. My initial question would be like, so how do I, what do you mean? How do I do that? In all of them? Let's say that there's 75 houses in this neighborhood. How can I love all those neighbors? And what do you mean by love? I think his first question, the guy's question, not the first question, but this follow-up question is a way of him trying to say, how can I limit this so it's bearable? Like, no, okay, oh, HOA president, you don't mean all the neighbors, right? Like, how about like my next door neighbor? I'll mow his lawn if he's on vacation, but do I need to like walk around all week long with my mower looking for people who need their lawns mowed? Do I need to find everybody in this neighborhood whose kid needs a ride to school and spend my whole morning shuttling kids to school? How do I limit this so it's manageable? It's a perfectly reasonable question. If I can do that, if you tell me, oh, you know what? When I say love your neighbor, I don't mean all your neighbors. And I don't mean you have to like passionately care for all their needs. But your next door neighbor, he's a guy who's on vacation quite a bit and his lawn gets long and it's kind of irritating. If you could help him out with his lawn while he's on vacation, that'd be great. Then I'd be like, yes, I can do that. I can do that. And that answer, I can do that, is the self-justification answer. I can do that. And what Jesus is motivating this guy to see, I believe, is to say, I can't do that. You know, like I've posed as a good dad a lot in my life. And what I need to do is to stop posing and say, I can't do this. I need outside help. I've posed as a good pastor. And I've been there where I've like worked really hard on a sermon and preached what I think is a slam bang ringer. And nobody cares about it. And at that point, I need to say, I can't do this. Instead of, well, what kind of sermon do you guys need me to preach where you'll all like bow down at my feet and love me? I don't really want them to do that. That would be embarrassing. But you know what I mean? I get my identity from their appreciation of my sermons. I get my sense of purpose. I justify myself. We all
love affirmation.
Yes. And I can do that. I can do what it takes to get that affirmation. That's the self-justifying answer. I can't do it, and they can't do it for me. I've got to get it from elsewhere. And I think what Jesus is trying to get this guy to say is, I can't justify myself. In other words, I can't love my neighbor. And Jesus tells him a story where it's almost impossible to do. Can this guy imagine a scenario where a Samaritan is a lover and he just can't do it? He cannot do it. Who's the neighbor? Jesus says. He can't say it's the Samaritan. He's like, well, the guy in your story that did all the good stuff. And what Jesus wants him to say is, you can't do it. You can't do it. You can't imagine a scenario where you can do enough to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Don't try and limit it. That's the easy way out. If you could limit it if you want to. But I'll find that if I mow my neighbor's yard, he's not gonna be appreciative enough for me. I mowed our yard yesterday. There was an appointment I had in the afternoon, and the guy who made the appointment wasn't feeling well and broke the appointment. And so I went home and mowed the yard, and I had to tell Angela last night. She came home. She pulled up in the driveway. She drove right through the, you know, past our front yard, circled around by our backyard, and she pulled into the garage. And I had to tell her at dinner time, I had to say, hey, I mowed the yard yesterday. It's a true story. I needed the affirmation from her, and I didn't get it. Until I said, I mowed the yard yesterday. And she said, oh yeah, it looks nice. You know, but I can't ask her to fulfill my need to be justified. And I can't do enough yard mowing to get the justification out of her, my neighbor, my closest neighbor, that I need. And I need to say to Jesus and to Angela, I can't do this. I can't count on you. I can't count on myself. I can't self-justify. I need Jesus.
Well, now you've uncovered maybe the problem. Because we sat down here to talk about justification, and we, at least I presented us as, we're going to tell you what it is and how you tell other people about it. Here's your formula. Here's how you get this done. Without talking about the fact that there is a self-justification mechanism in all of us that is powerful and is troublesome.
Yeah.
And even if we did the best justification explanation that we could do today, we might not be able to overcome that self-justification instinct in us. So what do we do?
Well, yeah, you're right. I'll tell you how powerful it is. Reformation formed Christians like Lutherans, like you and I are, that the impulse to self-justification is so powerful that we hear sermons that you're not justified by works, you're justified by faith. And we say, that's it. I don't have to do works to get saved. I have to do faith to get saved. And we turn faith into a self-justification. Instead of like, oh, I don't bring works to Jesus' feet and then he saves me. Now I bring my faith to Jesus' feet. That's self-justification. I'm trying to justify myself by my own faith. That's not what justification by faith means. But I should just say, justification by faith means leaning on him alone, wrapping our arms around his neck and saying, I'm going to fall. You have to hold on to me. I shouldn't even say wrapping our arms around his neck because that's even tricky too. But you're right. The impulse to self-justification is so strong that we say, oh, I don't have to do good works.
We are capable of turning justification into self-justification.
Yes, yes, yes. I offer God my faith and he says, okay, for your faith, I give you salvation. And it's just another form of self-justification. We don't rely on Christ. Now we're not saved by faith in Jesus. We're saved by faith in Jesus.
So how long has this self-justification mechanism been a problem? Let's look at Genesis 3. That goes back pretty far. That's the description of the fall of Adam and Eve. And after having eaten the forbidden fruit, they are confronted by God. Eve says it was the serpent's fault for deceiving her.
Yes.
Adam says it was Eve's fault for giving him the fruit. So for the seasoned Christian, the comparatively mature Christian, in other words, you ought to know better, how strong is the temptation for self-justification for the person who ought to know better?
It's like we've been saying, it's irresistible. It's irresistible. We're so turned in on ourselves.
Irresistible.
Irresistible. We're so turned in on ourselves that the impulse to justify ourselves is immense. If I'm on the first tee box and I swing and miss my driver, I swing and miss, I am humiliated. And the reason why is because it's very important for people who watch me play golf to know that I'm a good golfer, at least that I can hit the ball straight. And when I don't, I'm going to in my own mind, I'm going to be humiliated because my attempts to self-justify have failed. I can't avoid that. I might even, if it's particularly strong, make an excuse. My back twinged right in my backswing and whatever. You know, we all do this and you're totally right. That's a great, great text. It started with Adam and Eve. It's not my fault. You know, this should not count against my own worthiness. It's out there. It's something else outside of me. It's irresistible. We're just going to have to fight all the time. There's no person alive who we're always making idols. There's no person alive who relies completely on God's love for them in Jesus Christ for their purpose and meaning. We will always be tempted to find it in something about ourselves. And that's a damning quality. And you know, when Luther says we're simultaneously just and sinners, he's not saying there's this part of you that's justified by Christ and there's this other part of you that's sinful. He's saying we're simultaneously seeking justification in ourselves and as Christians simultaneously receiving our justification from Christ. The farce of the matter is that I still think it's super important for people to like my sermons. I stand up and I preach justification by faith and then I'm disappointed when I don't get justified by my sermons. As I'm disappointed in that, God is justifying me purely by his own grace. You don't need to be a good preacher. You don't need to be a good golfer. You don't need to be a good parent. You don't even need to be a good person morally. I'm giving you this justification. And the farce of it is even though my brain knows that, I'm still looking to myself.
And I guess we're stuck with that.
Yeah. Until Jesus returns. Except for what we can do is constantly be feeding on the word and the sacraments. And we should be in good Christian community that reminds us your value is in what God thinks about you in Jesus. That's the only way you'll have infinite value. And we can kind of slowly grow into it. I've gotten better about this. I've become less of a people pleaser in my ministry than I was 15 years ago, for sure. Like I'm more like, if somebody's upset with me, but I'm doing what God wants me to do, I'm going to get my love and affection and acceptance from Christ. Whereas before, I knew that as a fact, but I was still like, it was hard for me to do the hard thing in churches because I wanted that. I wanted to justify myself by people's love, but I'm growing into it.
There can be a moment, and I'm sure you've seen this as a pastor because you have probably dealt with people who are struggling with this. There can be a moment where it becomes revealed. You see that the pursuit of self-justification is just wearing, it's just wearing me out.
Yes.
And I'm just on the treadmill and I'm not gaining any ground. And I sort of knew about justification by God's grace through faith. I've heard about it all my life. And then there comes a moment sometimes, you're nodding your head, I guess I don't have to say any more about
no,
this.
No, do this, good.
When all of a sudden there is a clarity about, I don't have to be in the business of wearing myself out, justifying myself.
Yes.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean that you won't still have that instinct, that impulse, but you can move past it. You're not stuck.
Yeah. That's totally a faith issue. Like trusting Jesus, that he gives me his Father's love infinitely. And I've had this experience several times as a pastor, that you preach a sermon and somebody comes up to you and says, that sermon on justification was great. I was really thinking about my wife and her need for that. And I'll think, no, you need it more. And then the next week, people won't like my sermons and I'll get frustrated and I'll be like, wait, no, I needed it more. Why was I focused on that guy? That guy was focused on his wife. I was focused on his need for it. And I should have been focused on my need for it. And you're right. That just wears you out. And most Lutherans I know don't, like, morally, they know this is true. Like, they'll go out on the weekend and drink too much. And they'll be like, you know what though? I'm going to go to communion tomorrow. Jesus forgives me. You know, and moral deeds, but in other areas, like their jobs, their families, their finances, their attractiveness, their shape, you know, how healthy they are, they struggle with this. And what they need to do, I think, no, I don't know. I don't want to say that. I don't know. We all need to grow up into faith more and more and find the relief that comes from knowing I cannot. It's not just that I don't need to preach a whiz-bang sermon every Sunday. I can't preach a whiz-bang sermon every Sunday. And even the ones I think are whiz-bang aren't good enough to have the effect on people. When you get to that point, there's deep relief in being freed up. And I've talked about this in here before. You know, I want Angela to be attracted to me because that actually is self-justifying. It's not just, I mean, it's nice when your woman's attracted to you, right? But it gives me a sense of attractiveness when she's attracted to me. And I can insist on that and pray for that and hope for that so much that it dehumanizes her in my mind because she can't possibly be attracted to me enough to make me feel attractive infinitely. I'll end up crushing her. But when I come to realize that Jesus is attracted to me. My Father's attracted to me. And he says, I'm infinitely attracted to you. That frees me up to not need it from Angela. And it liberates me to actually be attracted to her and not ask for any attractiveness back. That's liberating. You're right. It's totally relaxing. Now it's not perfect because I still will always manage somehow to circle back to, but I really do need Angela to be who I want her to be, and my kids to be who them, and my church, and my friends, and my neighbors, and myself to be who I want to. But it's I'm on that path. I think God's got me on that path of learning to relax in His salvation and not in my own attempts to save myself.
The actual word justification doesn't appear very often, that word, but it appears three times in the book of Romans. Paul uses it three times there. And as I was kind of looking, you know, around that word, seeing what the Bible had to say about that word, in Romans 4, Paul describes Jesus as he who was delivered up for our trespasses and raised for our justification. And I thought to myself, for the first time reading this verse, my justification is in his rising from the dead.
Right, yeah.
Period.
Yes.
It was kind of a game changer for me. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Paul says elsewhere in his writings that the end of all of our self-justification is death. The end of these things is death. And what does he mean? Like, what if my self-justification is in money? Okay, so I work and I work to save and get money, and then I die. What if my self-justification is in people being attracted to me? All right, so I work out to get in good shape, or I learn how to tell funny jokes so people will think I'm funny, or I just am a super nice guy so my friends and neighbors all think I'm nice, and I do all that, and then I die. And where's all that niceness gone? Where's my money gone? Where's my attractiveness gone? I thought about this. You know, when I took the call to leave St. James and Glen Carbon to go to Trinity in Springfield, Moses was heavy on my mind. And I think that one of my last sermons at St. James and Glen Carbon, I preached about Moses and how, you know, you as a pastor, you can go into a church and you can pastor a church and pour yourself into that church and visit and love and preach and teach. And then what happens? You die and you stand on the mountainside, and Moses got the vision. This is where the people are going after you're dead. The end of self-justification is death. It doesn't just mean, it's true that the end of sinning will kill you, but the end of all self-justifications is death, because I am going to die. And when I die, my sermons die and my good looks, which died a long time ago, if I still have any, will die. And my money will die. And my family will die to me. Even the ones who are still left, I won't be able to talk to them anymore. And then what happens? What do I need? I need somebody to raise me back up to a life. I need somebody to raise my dead body up and take me over into the promised land with the rest of the people of God, with the rest of my churches. I can't do that. I just can't do that. And raised for our justification captures that brilliantly. Our justification is in the eternality of God's loving acceptance of us. Everything else dies. My house is going to fall apart. My cars are going to fall apart. My ministry will fall apart. My health will fall apart. But the one thing that lives forever is the Jesus who rose from the dead. And if I'm baptized into him, I will have justification for it. That's what I've got to lean on. And that's given me great hope. And as I've gotten older, and I know now, when I was a young Christian, I thought, you talk to older Christians and they're like, yeah, I'm ready to go and meet the Lord. I was not. I still had to write the great American novel. I still wanted to have a legacy. I still wanted to have babies. And I wanted to make money. And now I see where they're at. You do all those things and you're like, you know what? That's all going away. The one thing that doesn't go away is resurrection from the dead. Jesus rose from the dead, and he's the only thing that can get me through that legacy wall, that my novel, which I've never written, and the money that I've never made, and my three beautiful kids, it's not their fault. They're never going to get me through that. They're never going to get me through that legacy wall. But what can get, they'll never get me in the promised land. But the resurrected Jesus can, and that's got to be my only purpose and hope and meaning.
Let's say that there's at least one person listening to us who, in some part because of this conversation that they're listening to, experience that revelation that justification is in Jesus, and all the self-justifying that they now admit to themselves that they've been doing is really not that valuable, self-justification.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. If you've had that experience, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But then we have to qualify it by saying, you're never, ever, really ever going to stop being a self-justifier. That's kind of discouraging to say that. We're saying, we're sort of like handing out this beautiful thing with one hand and taking it back with the other. What do you say?
Well, we're not taking it back. I'm not
kind of feels like it. And, you know, I had hoped to be free of this instinct to self-justify, and now I find out I'm never going to be free of it.
You will be free of it. You're free of it. So
I want to be free of it now, not when I get to eternity.
Well, just pray for a imminent death. And, you know, there's really no way. What I'm saying is this, is that when I meet adult believers who've come to that point, who've tried it, you know, I heard an interview. I'm sorry, this is like very in the weeds. Bernhard Langer, a German golfer, still plays like on the, he still competes in the Masters every year. He won the Masters way back in 1985. He won the Masters. And he said, I heard this interview with him recently. He said, I won the Masters in 1985. I think he was 26 years old. He said, and had the party with my family and friends afterwards. And he said, I went home and I got in bed to sleep later that night and I could not sleep. I was so excited to win the Masters. And so I laid there awake, just jacked up that I finally won this major tournament. And over the course of the evening, it shifted from excitement to, this doesn't mean anything. What? I don't feel different actually. As the hours pass, I realize that nothing has changed. I've worked my whole life and nothing has changed. And a few years later, he met Jesus. He's very outspoken about his Christianity now. And it all changes. I don't have to win the Masters to have purpose and meaning. I won the Masters and it didn't do anything. When you meet adult converts who've tried it, they've tried the money, they've tried the family, they've worked for the McMansion house, career success, academic success, great friends. They've traveled and seen exotic places they didn't think they were going to. And then they get all that and they're like, but what? This doesn't do it. And then they meet Jesus and they're like, yes, I have purpose and meaning based upon what somebody else, the only person who has the right to make an infinitely positive account of me. Not even my best friends or my wife can do that. Yes, now I have purpose and meaning. And then they start to slip back into, I need to perform on the golf course in order to be accepted. It's not, nothing's been taken away from them. We've just reoriented ourselves. We want to go back to Egypt. We've reoriented ourselves to a way of life that we've always known from the beginning isn't going to do what we want it to do. And the key is not, well, you've lost it. The key is turn around. Jesus is still here. You don't need that. And so as we get better by faith to shifting ourselves, turning from these alternative, and you said it earlier, Chuck, this doesn't mean that you shouldn't work hard to become a better golfer or that you shouldn't try to obey the Ten Commandments or to be a good husband or wife or neighbor or be good at your job. It doesn't mean you shouldn't work hard to make money. But instead of finding our meaning from that, constantly repenting and turning back and saying, but none of that will ever give me purpose. It's all tools I can use to love and serve others, to bring pleasure to myself and to those who watch me and to the God who watches me. But my ultimate meaning and purpose and justification comes from Jesus. The Christian life is just a daily dying to that old man and turning to Jesus and saying, I get my meaning from you. And the more we do it, the better we get at it. So nothing's been taken away from us. It's just that we've turned our heads and are now looking back at the old idols, and we just need to have the Holy Spirit turn our heads to look back at Jesus.
So I was going to ask you to sum up for the person who's listening to us, who heard us begin, we're going to talk about justification, and right away they thought, yeah, give me the formula. You know, give me the...
Right, yeah.
And I don't think we quite did that.
No, you can't.
Not the formula.
Yeah.
But I think what you just said, that summary, is what we would give to a listener saying, here's how you communicate this to a friend of yours.
Yeah, yeah. So absolutely.
Can you... I don't want to make you restate the whole thing, but if we plopped you down in that situation now, you're in our listener's shoes and you've been troubled about how do I try to talk about justification to this friend who seems to be interested in it. Without formalizing it, what would you say?
Yeah. So this is why justification, don't talk about it in the abstract. You know, we're justified by faith in Jesus. Find out where you, if you're talking to yourself about this, which I do all the time, or find out where your friend is looking for his meaning. Where is he trying to justify himself? What does he think this is going to give me value? If I can get to this level, I can look at the rest of the world, or I can look at my face in the mirror and say, you are worthy of existing. Find out where that is, and then say to him slowly, lovingly, over the course of maybe many conversations, yeah, it's never going to work. Everybody else has tried the same thing. It doesn't work. Maybe try this other thing. Maybe it's going to come from outside of you. Maybe it's going to have to be God himself saying, you don't have to be a great golfer. Jesus already loves you. And then, one of the questions is, what must I do to be saved? You know, what do I have to, okay, so I can't be saved by my good looks or by my good works or by my good golf game. What do I do? That's a trick question, right? Like, you can't do faith. Just look at Jesus. He already loves you. You don't have to do anything. He already loves you infinitely. That's all you have to do. And as people grow into that, they grow into this sense that I'm justified not by myself, but by God.
Well, you've been listening to Craving Answers, Craving God. Today's discussion is indeed foundational to the understanding of the Christian faith. This program might be helpful for someone you know. Please share Craving Answers, Craving God, episode 143, with your friends as you see fit. For Pastor Aaron Miller and production manager Larry O'Leary, I'm Chuck Rathert.